This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Grid Talk and happy Pride Month. My name is Tom Downey and here today we are going to discuss the 2024 Spanish Grand Prix. Joining me, we have the fabulous as ever Grid Talk co-host Ruby Price.
Hello.
Hello, mate. And we also have none other than Philip Matthew from the Grip Strip podcast.
Hello.
Good afternoon, sir. Before we get into this episode, we must thank our sponsor, Bet Online. So Bet Online is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads are available whilst the games are being played. When the game is over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Please use the promo code BLEAV, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online where the game starts. Also, please be sure to follow our show on the not so much brand new socials. I believe they're coming up to a year old, Ruby, to stay up to date with the show. So, now that the formalities are out of the way, we're going to talk about the 2024 Spanish Grand Prix. And, Ruby, we're going to start, unsurprisingly, with the team that started the race for all of 0.31 seconds at the front of the grid, McLaren. Now, specifically Lando, as we all know, he was on pole. I was certainly excited for it. You know, the McLarens have been looking rather pacey recently. Sadly, by the time we got to turn one, Lando had dropped down to P3. Now, we can potentially say that there were two issues which caused him to drop to where he did. He had a slow pit stop, I believe, for his second pit stop, which cost him any time he would have had for the overcut. And ultimately, he did have quite a poor getaway. Do you think Lando could have won today had even one of those things gone in his favour? Or do you think he was always destined for second?
I think Lando should have won today, starting from the front in what is currently probably the fastest car, at least consistently at the moment. You know, Verstappen in the Red Bulls do seem to be having a fundamental issue with their car that's affecting their pace, particularly at circuits with a lot of curbs, which Catalunya is certainly one of those. But ultimately, when it came to Lando, that long run down to the first corner, like starting on pole, you're always going to be a target. And we saw that with the slipstream effect that George Russell got off the start. But the fact that Max also managed to get through at this point meant that, you know, Lando was going to be destined to be P2, I think, from that point. Obviously, there was the slow pit stop, which, you know, further compounded the gap that had already built up by the fact that they went on a different plan. They were running plan B plus 10 at one point. So they were already going long. But Lando's entire focus for the whole race was getting that P1 back. You know, the team were asking, you know, do you want to box and cover off Hamilton? No was the answer because he was just thinking about Verstappen. Do you want to box and cover off Russell? No, I'm just going to hunt down Max. Like, Lando's entire, like, ambitions for the Spanish Grand Prix were P1 at the end of the race, and you could hear it when it finished. He was angry with himself, and he knows that it was at the start really that ultimately cost him, because, you know, he's finished the race 2 seconds off. He lost 4 seconds being behind George Russell in the first stint of the session. It was the start that cost him, and everything else further compounded it.
Yeah, I mean, it does pain me to agree with you, but I do agree with you, Ruby. It was ultimately the start that cost him. You know, as you said, he did very well to get back up to where he was, and he was hunting down Max. You know, had a great scrap with George Russell at one point where the two of them were sort of swinging back and forth all the way from turn one through to around turn 10. That was absolutely sensational to watch, and something that we have sort of been missing at the front of the grid, as I think is fair to say. But Phil, Ruby mentioned that McLaren has the quickest car. Now, McLaren was interviewed on the grid by Rachel Brooks, and I believe it was Bob Bell said that Red Bull has the quickest car. Based on what we've seen this entire weekend, so obviously qualifying, you know, pre-practice and then indeed the race today, who do you think's got the quickest car out of McLaren and Red Bull, or do you think it's someone else?
I think that it's a circuit-based thing. There's no one specific, personally. Max is Max for the last, I don't know, 5 years. That hasn't changed. That isn't going to change. When he's driving that car and he's comfortable, nobody can stop it. Lando this year has found an extra gear, and that car has been much better. So in his hands, depending on the circuit, it seems like he's able to put things together as well. Now you put that combination together, that's where we've had two races where it's actually the second place driver has been in the same planet. Otherwise, I mean, we look at most of the results this year and it's the same stuff that we've seen for like 2 years. Until really proven on a absolute regular basis otherwise, I'll continue to say that it's the one car and Red Bull. And there will be weekends where they may be on the back foot. There will be times where he will have to actually work. But seemingly, when those times come, Verstappen comes up with 0.3 out of his bag. So it's where he's able to qualify in the front row. If his car was not as good, I don't think he would have been on the front row. He's not having issues with qualifying, so to speak. So I figure the way to really determine that, how fast that car will be, is one, based on the second drivers, Piastri's race. Kraft is still an issue, and he's trying to work through that. Very fast, very capable, but still trying to figure that out. And then we all know about Checo. If we see them rising up, and then also in general, I think, you know, we need more time. Personally, I think it's too even because depending on the racetrack, but Lando Norris is showing the skill that so many have said that he has had for so many years. They've given him a great car. So now at least his buddy actually has to work hard for the first time since 2021. So for that, we should be glad. But Red Bull still has the fastest car until further notice.
Until about 2026, I would probably say, Phil. Yeah. No, that's a fair point, and I do agree with you what you said about it being a circuit dependent sort of scenario, because I think it's safe to say that the Red Bull was not the quickest car in Monaco, you know, by quite a way. So you do make a good point. Ruby, let's have a quick sort of look at George Russell. So he started on the second row and he got the absolute launch of dreams. He let Lando and Max sort of scrap it out on the right-hand side of the grid, and he said, thank you very much, I'll see you next week. And he swooped around the outside of turn one in, you know, I'm obviously not a Russell fan, but there's no denying that that was a good move. Obviously, it looks spectacular on TV, and he absolutely took the chance and sent it. Now, obviously, Max got back at him. Do you think that if he'd have been... do you think if he'd have had Lando behind him and not Max, do you think there was perhaps a bit more chance of him going on to lead the race? And then further on, he got put onto the hard tyres, whereas Hamilton got put onto the softs. which ultimately cost him a podium and Hamilton's, I believe he said, 198th podium. Do you think it was a bit of a missed opportunity for him today, given the start he had, or do you think it was that Merck was about where it could be?
I think the first thing that ultimately cost George Russell the win was the fact that Max Verstappen and Red Bull basically said, if we don't attack right now, we've lost our opportunity for the whole race. Because as Max was saying in the cool down room afterwards, if you don't make that move, your car just overheats and you're stuck behind because you're constantly managing after that at that point. Now, the race start, George Russell, as I said earlier, like being in that second row, you already have an advantage in the sense that you've got two cars punching a hole in the air in front of you. It's such a long run down to turn one. And we saw it last season as well. It was the drivers that were in P2 and P3 that were challenging the drivers in P1 going into turn one, which is exactly what George did. But this time, as opposed to going to the inside, he goes to the outside, which is where Lando and Verstappen have left a gap for him to just send it, get on the outside, keep it on the track as well. Very important that. Otherwise, he's giving that position back and losing time and his tyres are getting dirty and all of that. But absolutely capitalized on what he had. Unfortunately, Max went for it, did just that, going into turn one on lap three. And when the DRS is worth about 11 miles per hour, there wasn't much that George Russell was going to be able to do. But at that point, he's in P2, still got a chance. But then Lando gets him after the pit stops sort themselves out. He, had a slow stop for the rear right. And then boxed with Carlos Sainz on lap 37 for the hards to the end. And that was the final nail in the coffin. The hards were not a good race tire today, which considering that half of the midfield from about P9 to P16 were all running the hards at the end. That's why there was just so much time like on the board for the cars that weren't running the hards. But ultimately, they weren't. The hards weren't the right race tire. Lewis Hamilton, with the added benefit of the fact that his teammate's gone on to the hards, he can make a decision later on to say the hards aren't the right tire. Right, what have we got? We've got some used softs. We've got some mediums. We're on the mediums at the minute. We know how the mediums are going. And then he puts on the softs. And ultimately, from that point, he's got the quickest car setup. So I do think Mercedes probably missed a trick in not letting Lewis pass at the time. Like, I know that nobody likes team orders, but whilst they are allowed in the rules, the teams, I think, should, for the sake of competitiveness, be using them. And Russell was ahead of Hamilton on the slower tyres. Hamilton was visibly quick on the softs. He needed to pass to chase Norris. There were 17 laps left. Lewis lost the DRS, came back to within the DRS of Russell again. But by the time he got past Russell, he's lost 3 seconds to him. And then at that point, it's too late anyway. So then Lewis just goes to the end and finishes, 15 seconds off Lando in front? Like, it was from that point onwards, like, it was just defend P3. Good to see Lewis Hamilton coming home on the podium for the 198th time. I know it had no bearing on it whatsoever, but the fact that it happened whilst he was wearing a Pride helmet means a lot to me. Will it continue in Austria? We don't know. Maybe if they put some pumpernickel in the car, it might, give it a bit of grit. But we'll see what happens next time.
Oh, that we will. Yeah, I wonder if it'll be the pumpernickel power which will get them a podium in Austria. I've just checked very quickly, Ruby. We were talking about it earlier, before we started, but we said, has Hamilton got the most ever podium places? He has, by quite a margin. As we said, that was his 198th podium. In second is Michael Schumacher with 155, and that gives Hamilton a percentage of 57.89% of all his races have been on the podium.
Are you still looking at that information? Because where's Verstappen and how long until he's eclipsed that record?
Verstappen is on 106 podiums. He is tied with Alonso and Alan Prost. And percentage-wise, he's 3.5% behind Hamilton. Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah, let's revisit that one at the end of the season, shall we? And see what it says then. But yes. No, that was... yeah, and of course, you know, like you said, Hamilton, you know, first podium since Mexico 2023. You know, for me, I know I didn't vote him driver of the day, but for me, it was absolutely a 5-star drive from him. And segue, if you want to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, please do so. It really does help us out, and we do like reading all your comments and any sort of your criticism or constructive feedback. We are always open to, always open to taking it on board. But just remember, always be nice. Now, Phil, we're going to wind it back a little bit, you know, rewind all the way to FP3. I know you're probably thinking, well, why on earth are we talking about a free...
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, "This is a forever symbol of our forever love." As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, "Thanks for standing up there with us." Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Practice session, that's just for the strategists to get their tire information and their fuel runs. It's because we had a couple of incidents, and I don't mean an incident like where Max took off his front wing of the pit lane. I mean where two drivers arguably used their cars as battering rams, or certainly weapons of intimidation. You might think I'm being a bit dramatic, but I don't think so, but I would say that. So the first one was Lance Stroll with the spatial awareness of a blind cat going through turn 7, I believe it was. Hamilton. Stroll was going through turn, I believe it was turn 7. He didn't see Hamilton. If he did, he then sort of veered into him anyway. Once Hamilton saw Stroll, Hamilton got out of the way. I presume you've seen the clip. And then Stroll just ultimately caused a bit of bodywork damage to his own car. Both drivers received a reprimand. There's that one, and then the other one, which is the Leclerc incident, which happened shortly afterwards, which I believe was in a similar part of the circuit. Now, the Leclerc one is the one which I think is a bit more egregious, and I'd like to get your input on this, Phil, and really I'll probably come to you on this one anyway because of what it was. Do we think that if a driver uses a car in an intimidating and or dangerous manner, even if it's in free practice, do we think that a reprimand is sufficient, or do we think stronger action needs to be taken?
Stronger action should be taken, because that's not the way that you're... It's not a way to go and police driving standards is by giving reprimands. Reprimands basically say, yeah, you know, we saw that you did something really, really ridiculous and dumb. But yeah, we'll just go and give you a slap on the wrist. No, you give them a grid penalty, you give them a fine, you go and make them actually pay for it in the race or pay for it in some way, shape, or form. You penalize them with less time on the track in qualifying. So that would have compromised their strategies in terms of trying to qualify. In terms of Leclerc, I mean, the guy is supposed to be the number one at Ferrari, and he's a Grand Prix winner and this, that, and the other. How many years has he been in Grand Prix racing? He's supposed to be a top driver, you know. In the terms of Lance Stroll, you just have to watch Rocket Powered Mohawk to know what he is. And I mean, basically nobody outside of his own dad thinks anything of him. So, I mean, he is not a very intelligent fellow. He's been very lucky in life, and he's been oblivious through numerous incidents that he's been involved in his career. This would be yet the latest example of it. But, you know, I mean, you have to, it's the same thing that's going on here in the U.S. in terms of certain racing where people just use their cars as weapons and wreck people. And other drivers from other series come into race and they're like, was that me, or is it just them being, you know, dumb or stupid? And it's like, well, yeah, it's just being them being dumb and stupid because they don't know how to drive any better. Formula One's the pinnacle of motorsport, or supposed to be the pinnacle of motorsport. When you're using your car as a weapon, I think that that speaks, it's a poor example. I mean, we can go back a few years ago with certain guys, but we don't need to go there. For the two instances that took place this weekend, I mean, Leclerc knows better. It's just, I don't know what, he has random moments of brain fog, it seems, and way more random than it should be. And then with Stroll, I mean, we just have to let it go because the fact is he's Lance Stroll, unfortunately, which is pretty pathetic. But, you know, the Saudis haven't bought the team yet, so until that happens, we're stuck with them.
Yeah, I mean, you made some very, very good points there, Phil. You know, it was, you know, I'll say my piece for it. I will ask my panelists first, and you also co-host. Ruby, what do you think about this, just before I start tearing Stroll a new one?
I mean, as far as deliberately driving into another car goes, that should be a slam dunk penalty every single time. And not only that, like, what we see a lot, and as you've just alluded to, like, in our chat, you know, drivers are seen as role models and people to look up to. They are, you know, routinely called the 20 best drivers in the world. And what someone is going to see, like, is one of these 20 best drivers not getting their way, and so taking it out on the track by potentially, you know, endangering another driver. Like, this was very much brought into discussion in 2017 when Vettel deliberately drove into Lewis Hamilton at Baku, you know, after accusing him of brake testing. And the whole conversation came up again. You know, these are role models, these are people that people look up to. And if you see someone behaving like that and getting away with it scot-free, allegedly, then yeah, sure, I'll do that when I get to that level. You know, I've already seen my hero. I've seen my four-time world champion doing it. I've seen my, you know, I don't know how many race wins Charles Leclerc has got off the top of my head, but, you know, I will do, I've seen, you know, my favorite Monegasque driver, you know, doing it in a free practice session. I've seen my favorite Canadian, wait, no one's going to say that. I've seen one of the Canadian drivers doing it in a free practice session. And ultimately, like, the drivers should follow a code of conduct on track. And if they are going to break that code of conduct in a way that endangers any other driver deliberately, the full force of the FIA should be brought down upon them. And, you know, that's just not happening. We're seeing precedent thrown out of the window for the sake of, you know, not dulling out the competition and not having drivers not being involved in races. And I just think something needs to change.
It really does need to change, Ruby. You mentioned precedent. You know, the only thing that the FIA set a precedent for is for them taking precedent and throwing it out the window. I'm less than impressed by Stroll's actions. I mean, he's just got zero sort of like spatial awareness. And as for the Leclerc one, well, for the FIA to say that that wasn't dangerous. What, an 800 kilo F1 car being swung at an angle and he just gets a slap on the wrist? If someone used their car as a weapon like that on the road, they'd probably be in court for dangerous driving or something of that ilk. But what do we know, eh? You know, the FIA, they're not going to change. They're just a bit of a laughing stock at the minute. And that's me speaking from the heart. Anyway, now that we've finished sort of tearing into people, Ruby, this was a bit more of an interesting race in the sort of strategic sense. Part of that was definitely helped by the pit stop strategies. So we saw every driver do at least a two stop, and we saw some drivers do a three stop and really sort of rip through the fields. You know, like Sergio Perez, he went from the dizzying heights of 11th to 9th or 8th. So that extra stop really, really helped him in the fastest car on the grid today. That is sarcasm, if anybody's not quite sure. We've had the conversation around tyres so many times. We've had it where it's been a straight one stop. Everybody starts on mediums and goes to hards. We've had it where the Pirellis have basically turned into chewing gum or mashed potato after sort of like five laps, which is kind of what they did today. Do you think that introducing a form of a mandatory two-stop at every race would somewhat help the entertainment aspect of the sport? Or do you think that is meddling with the sport's integrity somewhat?
I think there is an element of meddling that would be involved in a mandatory strategy following. We already see this to an extent in the sense that, you know, F1 teams have to mandatorily change their tyres in a pit stop. They just have to change their tyres to a different compound during a race weekend. We saw it in Monaco at the start, you know, that they were allowed to change their tyres under a red flag, and ultimately it ruined any remaining strategy of the race weekend. But what we see is a lot that teams then start driving to the strategic requirements of the race. Again, referring to Monaco, we've just had a race, but I'm referring further back because it's just the first thing that comes to my head. But, you know, teams, can we get to the end of the race on this one set of tyres? Yes, we can. Cool. All right. Then the teams that can't do it all sort of start boxing themselves later at the same time. So what ultimately I'm trying to illustrate as my point is that teams, like, if they have to start doing mandatory two stops at every race, what we'll see, you know, eventually is that the teams will all be doing the same strategy regardless, just at different, they'll just have to stop twice now. What I think would make a big change is if, obviously, we didn't have any safety cars or red flags during this race, but we have had them, you know, across this season. What I think would have more of an impact is making it so that a tyre change during a red flag or a safety car doesn't count towards your mandatory tyre change. I think that's going to have more of an impact. You can change tyre is what I'm still thinking, because obviously we've got safety grounds and things like that. But you would just have to stop again and change tyres again after that point. But, you know, I think we do have more entertaining races when there is a lot more strategy going on than just a one stop. You know, like, how often, maybe in other sports, you know, we should see more breaks going on. You know, that surely will reset the field as well. But, I think we would have a more entertaining race if more strategies going on. But at the same time, I don't think like you can do it with a mandatory requirement unless something fundamentally changes about the sport, as it did when we went from refueling to no refueling, you know, which then brought about the reason for the tire change and stuff like that. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I do see where you're coming from, and you know, the cynic in me wants obviously to see more action, but you know, the other part of, you know, there's a realist in me is, you know, this is a competitive sport, and the entertainment value is an added bonus, and we're not always going to get, you know, sort of action-packed racing every single weekend, just like at Monaco. Phil, one sort of final talking point, and this is something that sort of not come about, but it's become a bit more of a talking point over the last really couple of weeks, and with the sort of recent results we've had. Do you think this Red Bull period of dominance is coming to a close, if not already at a close? Bearing in mind, you know, we've had, what, 4 different race winners in, I think, the last 6 races. Perez is nowhere near the podium. Mind you, that's no surprise. And if you look at sort of how ruthless they were, even at the start of the season compared to now, in your opinion, is the Red Bull period of dominance coming or has come to a close?
No. And the only way that I will believe that is when the one car actually has to struggle on a weekly basis, which is not happening. As much as he loves to yell at GP because I think it's for dramatic purposes, the fact of the matter is the man has 61 Grand Prix wins and I don't know how many poles and 100 and something podiums, like we said earlier. No. Until he has to struggle on a weekly basis, we're not seeing anything. It hasn't ended. As long as Adrian Newey is there, it hasn't ended. They lead the points by like 8 trillion still. So, I mean, it's not, you know, that's the short answer. The longer answer is, yes, we have McLaren since last year at the British Grand Prix. We have Ferrari on and off. Mercedes for the first time since sometime in 2021, which even then they didn't have a good car, to be fair, but at times, but they're finally in the mix. Okay, so now at least there might be some intrigue in these races. The rest of this season will have some level of curiosity in that who can we say will be the one that can give Red Bull the biggest fight on a weekly basis. But no, until, you know, until Verstappen has to actually come from the tail and win races, which of course he's done that too, but you know, like something comes up and then he's having to do that often, or he's not making it out of Q2, or he's buried in the top 10 and struggling to get through, like he's like Valtteri Bottas in a Mercedes, then we'll say it's over, but it isn't over. And it's probably not going to be over, like Tom said, for another year or so until these new regulations come on. And so that's fine. But I will say that for the last few races, it's been a nice change to have a little bit of unpredictability. I mean, on my show, it basically became our pick'em segment was basically who's going to finish behind him. And we spent maybe 2 minutes talking about racing. So now we actually have to spend more time talking about it because there's actually 4 teams. So that's a positive for me as who's been a Formula One fan for as long as I have. It's nice to actually be able to talk about Formula and talk about somebody other than one driver.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of us at the start of the season were perhaps concerned that it was going to be a rerun of 2023. And the first couple of races of the season definitely sort of gave us that impression. But I think it's safe to say things have sort of turned on their head a bit. And, you know, even as a Verstappen fan, I for one am glad to see that because he does still have to work for some of these wins at the moment. So With all that being said, I just want to give the two of you a chance to promo anything. So, Ruby, I mentioned you're obviously one of the co-hosts here at Grid Talk. And in fact, actually, you just reminded me in the Zoom chat, so not as good a segue. Very quickly, who was your driver of the day?
My driver of the day was Lewis Hamilton, to no one's surprise. But I think, you know, he made a lot of vital moves to secure that P3. The moves at turn one, against Carlos Sainz and George Russell. I think with the tire delta, like, and the differences between the hards and the softs, I think being in the position to be in P3 at the end of the race doesn't happen without the moves that he made. And you know, Verstappen led from the front generally, so otherwise I would have given it to him.
Not fair enough. Phil, who was your driver of the day?
I'm going to go with, this is something that I wouldn't think that I would say very often, but I'm going to actually go with Woody, because the fact is he actually made the race somewhat interesting early in the race. So for that alone, I have to give the guy credit. I mean, he did what he usually does, but I just for just to be different, I mean, it would be biased if I went and picked Sir Lewis Hamilton because of my I probably wanted to say that, but I figured just for fun I'll say Woody, because Russell actually getting a good start, holding the lead, not completing, crashing himself when Verstappen was trying to pass him, holding off Norris for a period of time, showed that he had some semblance of racecraft, so I give him credit for that.
Fair enough, Phil. You can always say whatever driver you like. And for me, my driver of the day, unsurprisingly, is Max Verstappen. He held off some charges. You know, did what he needed to at the start. Got the overtake done, and then sort of just saw off any sort of real challenges he had. So, for the second time of asking, Ruby, is there anything you want to give a quick shout out to?
I'll plug my own YouTube channel at Ruby Price. Now that they've got actual handles, if you want to go and follow me up there, I've got some videos planned that are going to be coming out soon.
Marvelous, thank you, mate. And Phil, I said not a member. You are, or certainly 50% or 51%, because you are the boss man of the Grip Strip podcast. Do you want to tell us a quick bit about that?
Yeah, thank you, Tom. And we do the GSP weekly. We go and talk about all things motorsports. We talk about Formula One, but we also have IndyCar, NASCAR. We talk about the lower series and the roundup. We kind of get everything done in one shot, longer form shows, so you get to listen to it while you're at work. And if you're bored at work, it's a great thing to listen to. You get to hear myself and my co-host Josh Fine rant sometimes, usually me. And there's usually things like, whether it's Danica Patrick, which really make me mad. Those are usually the best ones. You can listen to us basically if it goes fast. We talk about it on the Grip Strip podcast. We'll be back this week going and recapping a very busy weekend in motorsports from all over the world. I mean, we're coming off the Le Mans 24 hours, but then this weekend you had Formula One here in Spain, and then you had the 6 hours at the Glen, you had IndyCar, Laguna Seca, NASCAR, New Hampshire. So plenty to talk about there. And we'll do it all, myself and Josh Fine, my co-host and buddy and former guest on this show, on the GSP, over 220 episodes, which is crazy for me to think. That's just a part of what makes it so a passion project for me. And always, as always, great to be on with you guys. It's always awesome to be on with you, Tom and Ruby. Not used to Ruby being the panelist. Usually it's the other way around, and it's the two the evil empire, me and Tom going and seeing who's going to get canceled or more likely to get canceled. So it kind of threw me off that Tom was hosting. So it was awesome to be hosting with Ruby. And it's funny, I had my suck up shirt on. So I, for Pride Month, but also because I am a part of the Ruby Price fan club. So thanks everybody. Thanks to Aiden. It's always lovely to be on the Grid Talk.
They can't give me too much power, Phil. Like, if I host every show, like, eventually there's, you know, an imbalance. So I've got to spread the love every now and then.
Yeah. Basically, Phil, we've got to have some normality and some balance on here. Otherwise, the Ruby regime is taking over. So with that is a joke, by the way. We are all very good friends here, just to be clear. So with that all said, I would just like to say, both of you, thank you so much for joining me. Grid Talk is available on YouTube, where most episodes are recorded live, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Apple Music, Verbal, and Pocket Casts. Just search Formula One Grid Talk for our back catalogue of shows. Please consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we get mics, lights, and better recording equipment. Also, make sure you are subscribed so you're the first to know when each new show is released. We'll be back soon, namely on Wednesday, with plenty more F1 content where we'll be previewing the 2024 Austrian Grand Prix. Until then, thank you ever so much for listening to the Grid Talk podcast presented by Bet Online, and goodbye.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.